Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It is Jake and Stacy. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacy Ross. We have some matinee baseball for you guys. Mariners versus Orioles. M's looking to win that series in today's finale. First pitch at 1240. We are taking you right into the pregame show. And so you don't have to go anywhere. Stay tuned. Stick right here. Do not leave. You are parked. We are going to catch you up with just some of the latest you need to know in Seattle sports for 20 minutes. And then we are throwing you right there. So you are in for a great afternoon. Now, before we get to any Mariners talk, and DJ, you had some great questions for three questions coming up in 15. Before we get to any of that, Jake, I was thinking about something. Now, I don't know if you've experienced this. You and your wife, Brooke, have been together for a while. And so
yeah,
it's a bit different.
Coming up on 10 years, Stacey.
Congratulations. Congratulations. And it's a bit different being in a marriage. I mean, you still have to, be in simpatico and work together. And it's still kind of like having a roommate, but it's different. A marriage is different than having a roommate. I live with my two best friends. We have been best friends for 12 years, and so it's still a roommate situation. Now, I need to know, and anyone who has roommates, a roommate, maybe you live with a girlfriend or boyfriend or partner, whatever it is a little bit different. You have to know that if you call someone else out, right, you need to be aware that you are not making the same mistake, for instance. If I tell one of my roommates, hey, I really, really hate it when dishes are left in the sink overnight. I need to know that if I come down the next morning and I look in the sink and I see that I have left like four dishes in there, everyone else has realized that too. Everyone else has noticed that if I say, hey, you guys, let's make sure that we, you know, pick up our shoes from the living room. And I'm not really this crazy. This is an example. This is just an example. If you tell someone to do something, you better do it too, because no one was paying attention to you doing that. No one was noticing I was leaving a dish in the sink or you were leaving your shoes in the living room until you told other people about it.
Right.
Now,
it's a little bit of accountability, Stacey.
It
is. The moment that you talk, the moment that you vocalize those types of things, you demand certain things. There's some accountability follows through. You better be on your A game.
Well, and here's why I say that. I was thinking the other day, we were having kind of a general conversation, right? You and I were talking about which Seahawk is under the most pressure this year. And you can make a case for a ton of guys. For instance, if you're listening right now, you might be thinking, well, Jamal Adams, we've been talking for a month about how he's the most important part of this year's draft class. Heck, he's the most important part of next year's draft class. Don't forget you used next year's first rounder on him. The sky's the limit with his talent. He was an all-pro with the Jets, but he needs to be an all-pro with you. Maybe your answer is Jamal Adams, especially if you're going to be paying him several million dollars a year. Now, you've also got Daryl Taylor. Let's say your answer is Daryl Taylor. He was almost your first round pick last year. He's supposed to be a staple of your pass rush. And to be honest, that group still looks promising even without him this year. But you need to get it locked down for years to come. Seahawks fans are tired of heading into every offseason thinking, who's going to be the pass rusher? Where's the pass rush coming from? And it would be nice if you knew that someone on a rookie contract was going to be a contributor. Problem is, he's got to get on the field. So maybe your answer is Daryl Taylor. But I think that there is a Seahawk that has been here for much longer that, much like someone might do with their roommates, he called attention to something and all of a sudden the spotlight's on him. And Jake, it goes without saying that person's Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson looked around the apartment and he said, I'm tired of these dishes being left out. He said, I'm tired of being hit. I don't like it. Not a fan of it. And he didn't throw anyone under the bus. He just pointed to something. It's something we all knew was there. But now because he pointed to it, you know what I'm going to be seeing on Twitter when I'm covering the games every single time? Oh, Russell Wilson just took that sack. Oh, that's three sacks Russell Wilson's accountable for this game. There is going to be a pressure on him like never before to make sure he has nothing to do with the pressure he's facing. And that is impossible because every quarterback is going to have something to do with it. But he called it out.
Yeah, he certainly did. And, you know, drawed attention to it. And I think that conversation was a big topic of conversation, not just locally, but nationally as well. And so the question that I have, as you point out, him having arguably the most pressure on him heading into this year is, what is the fan experience going to be like? How are they going to react? How are they going to examine and talk about Russell Wilson and the offense heading into this season? Because one of the things that I highlight before any of those comments were made is you have to fix what happened at the end of last year. The second half of the season can't happen again. It cannot be repeated as a group and as an individual. Individual play of Russell Wilson has to be significantly better. And the odd part about it is Russell Wilson's coming off of statistically one of his best seasons as a pro. 40 touchdowns. You look at his completion percentage, highest of his career, got back to over 500 yards rushing. So there was a lot of positives to it, but then you look at the 13 interceptions. 40 touchdowns outweighs the 13 interceptions, but it's how it came. It came in bunches. And also the effectiveness or lack thereof in the second half of the season. You know, you had a game since the Rams game. Russell Wilson didn't pass for over 250 yards. He did it once, but it was in a losing effort over the Giants, right? He had a 4-touchdown effort, but it was against the New York Jets. So those are the things that you look at with Russell Wilson and say, man, that has to improve. That has to be better. And I wonder, as we go along the offseason, Stacey, as you hear Pete Carroll and John Schneider, and eventually we'll hear Russell Wilson, eventually we'll hear and circle back with Shane Waldron and the players as we get into training camp, as you hear more positivity, I would imagine, around what's happening with the organization and within the offense and within the players, if that shifts the fan base's thought process at all, or if everybody's locked in into their, you know, digging their heels in this situation and going, as you said, going to be pointing out every single sack, every single mistake along the way, I will be very curious about how that unfolds.
I think there's going to be times when, there's a coverage sack, no one's open, and it's still going to go on Russell Wilson. If Russell Wilson hangs onto the ball for more than 3 seconds, there will be people that are like, that's on Russell Wilson. And sometimes that's really fair, right? Get rid of the ball, throw it away. Other times it's going to be a lot trickier, and he may not have been criticized for that before. I remember, not just being local from Seattle, but also from covering this team, when a lot of the conversation was, if only Russell Wilson had a better offensive line. That conversation is going to change. It's now going to be, Russell Wilson, what are you doing for the offensive line? Fair or not? It just is because of what he did, and because people don't want it called out, right? People don't like when someone says, hey, make sure you don't do this. Hey, make sure about this. No one really likes that. And so they're going to be noticing it, even though it was completely within his right to say.
Most people agree, right?
And most people agree. Most people agree you shouldn't leave dishes in the sink for 3 days. But the second someone calls you out, you're like, who are you, my mom? Get out of here. I mean, it's a basic human reaction. It's just, who are you to say that? But before they say it, you're like, oh my God, I hate it when people leave dishes in the sink. It's so dirty. But the second someone calls it out, you're going to get defensive. The second Russell Wilson points to the offensive line, Seahawks fans are going to, you know, be looking at him and pointing fingers right back. And so I think you're right. I think Russell Wilson is under more pressure than any other Seahawk this year. And let's talk about what you said about his stats. He did have statistically his best season of his career. He also had, in the second half, the worst performance of his career. Another narrative that he's going to have to fight, fair or not, Jake, is going to be that he's a first-half MVP.
I think that that's a challenge that he embraces. I think that that's something that when you talk about his mindset and everything else, it's been a lot more of what he's done, the work that he's done behind the scenes, and me seeing it up close and personal here.
Okay, can I ask about that?
San Diego.
Jake, yes. You are in San Diego. No one else in this market is closer to Russell Wilson than you are physically right now. Can you tell us a bit about that? I haven't even asked you about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the realization, it wasn't a realization, but the conversation of how everything ended last year and how stark it ended and how poorly it ended. I think at this stage in Russell Wilson's career at 32 years old, looking into the future and having the desires and the goals that he has for himself and this team, I think that there was a good hard moment of reflecting and thinking of what can he do better. And he came out this offseason really putting everything that he possibly could into resources, into asking around, into, you know, getting all sorts of advice as to how to take that next step, how to make sure that the second half of last season doesn't happen again in his career. And I think that that's also why you saw him speak up a little bit more, why you saw him become more vocal. I think that that's why Pete Carroll also made the change with offensive coordinator, right? He made the change from Brian Schottenheimer to Shane Waldron. You want to see change. You want to see progression. You want to see this group move forward and not get stuck in a rut and not be able to make adjustments like they weren't able to last season. And I think the thing that also adds to the quote-unquote pressure, because, and I say that because I think it's external. I don't think it's internal. I don't think Pete Carroll and everybody in that building feels the pressure. I don't even think Russell Wilson feels the pressure. He put so much on himself already, Stacey. It's just like every other year. But I think that he is extremely motivated to make sure that that doesn't repeat for the team and for himself, that what happened in the second half of the season. So, you know, what did the Seahawks do? They changed offensive coordinators. They went out and got Gerald Everett, a legitimate pass-catching tight end that can be a chess piece. They went out and got Gabe Jackson to improve their offensive line at the left guard position. We'll see if that's enough, but I think Gabe Jackson is a good addition to this offensive line. They extended Tyler Lockett. They re-signed Chris Carson. They, in the second round, they go and add Dwayne Eskridge, who is a lightning in a bottle type of receiver that can bring big plays. So I think that offensively, they have all the pieces that you could ask for in terms of being able to work and giving, you know, could they have made more moves on the offensive line? Sure, yeah, of course. But I think that they have pretty much what they need to go out and be extremely successful and be a top five offense. And now it's going to be on Shane Waldron, it's going to be on Russell Wilson to go and see that through and to go and breathe that to life and to keep it going on a high level throughout the remainder of the year. And so when you talk about Russell and what he's done in this offseason, Stacey, he's revamped his team in terms of, you know, lifting, running, speed, you know, medically, diet-wise, all of it. I mean, just
and,
I think
and this, wisdom tooth-wise.
And wisdom tooth-wise, yes. He ended up getting his wisdom teeth pulled over the weekend.
He looked out of it.
He yes, he did. He was knocked out.
He was not here.
No, but I think for him, this was a rejuvenating process in terms of the motivation, the intensity, just getting back to everything that he is and everything that he is great at. I mean, we're talking about Stacey, a guy who is the winningest quarterback in his first nine seasons, the second only to Peyton Manning for most touchdown passes in his first nine seasons. He's second in career and passer rating all time behind Aaron Rodgers. He's the only quarterback to throw 30-plus touchdowns the last three seasons. Yet, Stacey, we're saying that he's got a lot of pressure on him heading into this year. It's a pretty fascinating situation to be in.
It is.
And he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But as you mentioned, when you put yourself out there, there's going to be people that are going to be turning it on you and having all eyes on you to see if you're coming through and following through on your performance.
Yeah, see, me personally, I'm not calling it out, so then I can leave dishes in the sink as long as I want. Don't forget, you can stream your favorite 710 ESPN Seattle shows at home through your smart speaker. And if you don't have one, listen up. Head to 710sports.com/win right now, where you can enter to win one. I mean, you don't have to do it like right now. Like if you're driving, you can pull over, you can do it later. But I'm just telling you, because it's actually one a day for the month of May. This contest isn't going anywhere this month. This month, we are giving you 31 chances to win a 710 ESPN Seattle logoed smart speaker. Head to 710sports.com/win to learn how. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Without further ado, DJ, time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
If the Packers end up moving on from Aaron Rodgers, which we're kind of debating if they will or not, where does that put the Seahawks in the NFC hierarchy?
Well, it certainly puts them one peg ahead. I mean, that's for sure. I mean, I think the Green Bay Packers certainly take a step backwards when eventually they move 1,000%. On from Aaron Rodgers and go with Jordan Love. And we don't even know if Jordan Love is going to come through or not, right?
I mean,
he's still an unknown, big-time unknown.
Do you know how mad I'm going to be if Jordan Love ends up being a franchise quarterback? Do you know how mad I'm going to be? It's not that I don't wish the best for every player that gets into the NFL. It's the fact that the Packers have had nothing but franchise quarterbacks.
Right. I mean, they've been blessed when it comes to quarterback play. Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and then if Jordan Love pans out, I mean, you'll be spoiled as a franchise in terms of quarterbacks. John Schneider talks about, you know, the lineman tree, or just, you know, joking about, oh, you could just go out to the tree and pluck great quarterbacks. Well, the Green Bay Packers fans, they think there is a tree and you could just go pluck them all. We've been doing pretty good at that. The Seahawks, I think, in that situation, if Aaron Rodgers is to leave the NFC West, if he is to no longer be a Green Bay Packer, I put them right up there behind the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I really think that they are in the upper echelon, obviously, of the NFC West. You could argue maybe the 49ers, the Rams, are ahead of them, but I really think that at that point, it would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Seattle Seahawks right behind them.
Ooh, man. Yeah, you got to take the Saints out of there now with their quarterback situation. They obviously would have been right in there. It's not that they don't still have a ton of talent, but it's do you have a quarterback or not, right? That's always going to be the question. So curious to see what the Rams look like with Stafford. They've got the defense. This division's going to be tough. Every other team I'm looking at as a contender that would push for Seattle is coming right from home. It's coming from their own division. So I think it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it is a couple teams, about five teams, vying for that second spot. But right now, you got to give it to Tampa Bay as leading the charge since they're coming off that Super Bowl. And until they prove otherwise, they are still the favorites.
Number two.
Kendall Graveman once again had a great outing last night, going 1 2/3 innings while extending his scoreless streak to 18 2/3 innings. If Graveman somehow keeps pitching at an elite level and the Mariners are, say, out of the playoff picture, what should the M's do with him at the trade deadline if contending teams start calling?
This is a really tough question because Graveman, I think, if he continues to keep playing at this level, you're going to have a playoff team that's going to look at Graveman and say, man, we want to add that to our bullpen. We can build our bullpen bolster our bullpen with an arm like Graveman, and they would be right. I mean, he's been fantastic this year with his stuff. But I also look at Graveman and say, I know bullpens are finicky, and it changes from year to year. He's 30 years old. I think he's just finding his groove as a bullpen arm in this league. And I believe that he could still be a key piece, a stapled piece to this bullpen. So I personally would advise against dealing Kendall Graveman. I don't know if you could get that big of a return that would be worthwhile. And I still think that the Mariners, after this year, hopefully, are really making that turn to become a very competitive ball club. And I think you're going to want somebody like Kendall Graveman, who has turned into a leader for your for the Mariners. I think that he's a guy that you want to keep around.
Yeah, the Mariners have had very recent experience trading a closer, obviously Diaz being part of that big deal for Kelnick, sent with Cano, and seeing the reward with the level of prospects and talent you got back, and also seeing Diaz not be anywhere near what he was the year prior with you. Like you said, Jake, those bullpens are finicky. Closers can be finicky, with the exception of some of the greats, obviously. But it is tempting. It is really tempting. I like Kendall Graveman. He's fantastic. He's also just a cool story to follow. With how much we complained about the bullpen the year prior, it feels like you should hang on to it. It feels like hang on to a good thing. Your bullpen might be the most consistent part of your season thus far. It hasn't been your rotation. It hasn't been your lineup. It is... Why mess with the most consistent part of that kind of triad of performances? So, yeah, hang on to Graveman.
Number three.
Last night, another notable Mariners performance. Kyle Lewis tied Alvin Davis as the fastest Mariner to 20 career home runs, both players doing it in their first 88 games. With all the talk about Jared Kelenic, Julio Rodriguez, and Logan Gilbert, just to name a few of the Mariners' top prospects, has Kyle Lewis become overshadowed?
I believe so in some aspects in terms of the conversation. And I brought it up, Stacey, before the season even started, right? Like, nobody really was talking about Kyle Lewis at all. And he just came off of the AL Rookie of the Year. Now, with Kyle Lewis, to me, there's been obvious reasons as to why that has been the case. Number one, he didn't start the year, right? He didn't start the year healthy. Yep. And so you had him out of the lineup, and so he's not part of the conversation. Now they're just starting to get him back. It looks like Kyle Lewis is really still trying to work his way into it. But you're reminded of the talent when he makes those big moments like last night, hitting that home run, hitting it with unbelievable power, and seeing the smile and the joy that he brings to the Mariners night in and night out. And one of the other aspects is when he came back, I mean, he's hitting 196 right now, right? So he hasn't, you know, absolutely lit it up. And I think it's more of a byproduct of the rest of the lineup, DJ,
yeah,
than it is necessarily about Mariners fans forgetting about Kyle Lewis. Everybody is excited about Kyle Lewis. Everybody still believes that he can be an incredible star in this league. But you hope that moments like that, last night against the Orioles, hitting that home run, that go-ahead home run, is going to be the mark of where you see his bat get hot and you see a really fun month of May for Kyle Lewis. And I think everybody will really start, you know, turning up the conversation on Lewis. But you're all right, DJ. A lot of people are yearning and desiring for some of these young prospects to get in. And I think that more has to do with the rest of the lineup and how weak it's been.
A fantastic point, Jake, and I love that point about it. It's not just this idea of, like, as people, we're always distracted by the shiny new toy. You have Kelnick coming in, a prospect you've been talking about for a while now. And even though you were excited about Lewis last year, we all knew that the second Kelnick became a possibility and got closer and closer to making his debut, that he'd be dominating that conversation. So, yeah, it makes sense. Part of it's human nature, but I love your point about part of it also being the lineup. Part of it is that he has been part of a lineup where the bats have cooled, and when they have been hot, not only has he not been in there, but it's been Haniger leading that, it's been Seager leading that, it's been France leading that. So now that Kyle's in there, it was a great play last night, but you just want to see more from the lineup as a whole. I mean, I'm pretty sure, DJ, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that the Baltimore Orioles had more hits and more guys left on base.
Yes.
Even. I think they had like 12 left on base and 7 hits or something like that to Seattle 6. So still outpacing you there. Anyway, so that will do it for three questions today. In fact, that's going to do it for Jake and Stacy today.
Man, went by so fast.
It literally flew by. We are already taking you guys today. Baseball, the Mariners take on the Orioles for matinee baseball. First pitch is at 12:40 p.m. We are taking you right into the pregame show. So stay parked right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Do not go anywhere. Mariners baseball is coming your way right
now,
Jake.
Enjoy the sun.
Enjoy the sun. Well, Jake, it's easy for you to say from San Diego. Don't rub it in our face. Come on,
well,
man.
It's a sunny day in Seattle right now, isn't it?
It is going to be a sunny day. I hope everyone at the park has a fantastic time. Please enjoy the weather for me. I'm going to be watching from home. But here's to hoping they get that series win over the Orioles. Let's go, Mariners. Go
Let's
nowhere.
Let's go, Mariners.
Stay right here. Pre-game show coming your way next.